Hello, listeners. This is Carolyn Yeager, bringing you another edition of the Heretics Hour on December 4th, 2015. I asked the great Germar Rudolph, he's always been a giant in my eyes, to talk about a topic he's obviously been thinking about lately, and that topic is how the problem of low birth rate in Germany and, in fact, all of Europe is giving a rationale for the ever-increasing migration from the Middle East and Africa that we are witnessing these days and being very upset about, may I add. Germar and I spoke via Skype on Tuesday, December 2nd, and I recorded it. That is coming up very shortly. I want to give you Germar's website first. It's very simply germarrudolph.com, which he started in 2012 and which has a lot of interesting and even essential content. And he's also responsible for the Holocaust Handbook series, which is a collection of 30 revisionist classics available at the Barnes Review Bookstore, the Kodo Bookstore, and at Amazon, among other locations. Germar, of course, is one of the essential revisionists of the so-called Holocaust, who has several books to his name that are essential to understanding why the main pillars of the Holocaust are false. Plus, he has been incarcerated in Germany for his work. He now lives in the United States with his wife and children. Before I go on, I want to take this opportunity to bring you up to date on the Heinrich Himmler Freedom Day speech that is being translated into English by Carlos Porter. What has happened is that Carlos located the written version of the speech in a Berlin archive and went through all the rigmarole to order a copy. His order has been approved, and he is now waiting for the invoice, which he then has to return with the payment, and after that the speech will be sent to him. As you know, he was not happy with trying to translate from the recording of the speech, and he much preferred to have a written transcript of it, and that's why he's now waiting on this. I can certainly understand that. And how long it will take, I'm not going to guess. It will surely be sometime in the new year. It won't be before then. So I'm just relaxing about it. And if for some reason it doesn't get done, I will return the money to those of you who contributed for this project via PayPal. But Carlos assures me he will get it, and it won't take him long once he gets the German transcript. So we'll see how that goes. Good things take a while sometimes. I also want to thank Daniel from California for a donation that he sent a while back. Now, as a little introduction to my talk with Germar, I'd like to point out that the ideal National Socialist family in the 1930s was four children. After her fourth child, a woman received the highly regarded Mother's Medal, or Mother's Pin. There was something a little more for each child beyond that, for child 5, 6, and 7. Then the eighth child brought the ultimate award to a German woman in service to her country, because, of course, the children had to be of German blood. That all worked at that time to bring about a great increase in the birth rate, because it wasn't actually about financial benefits, although financial incentives and rewards were also given, but it was also very much about being inspired by the National Socialist regime. Most Germans had a very high opinion of Adolf Hitler at that time, and they wanted to help bring about the great Germany that he said they were destined for. So they were willing to sacrifice, and they were willing to go to great lengths to do their part. I looked at a population chart a little bit ago that showed the highest population in Germany was in 1942, followed by 1941, and then 1943. In 1945, it started going down and hit its low point in 1948. Now, that says a lot. If they wanted to save German lives by ending the war, it sure didn't do that. In fact, more Germans died in the 3 years after the war than during the last 3 years of the war. But the point is that today, these rewards would not motivate women. Today's women go after the rewards and awards that used to be reserved for men. As Germar points out, women are no longer willing to stay home and take care of their children. Well, let's go now to Germar Rudolph. So, hi, Germar. How are you doing this morning?
Pretty good, pretty good. Apparently better than you. You've got a little bit of a cold, it sounds.
No, it's not a cold. It's just a condition that in the morning when the weather changes and so on. So we want to talk about, or I want you to talk about, the situation in Germany with an emphasis on the problem with the birth rate, which is something you were talking about on the David Duke show recently, and I found it very interesting and wanted you to talk about it some more. I wanted you to be able to say everything you had to say about it, you know, Germany in general, and if your birth rate goes down, you cannot support the previous generations, you know, in their old age. So where would you like to start with all of that?
Yeah. Well, the trigger for it all was the immigrant crisis they have in Germany right now that brought the topic up. Now, an immigration crisis Germany has had for decades is just that it's gotten much worse lately, last several months. And to David Duke, I said, well, the first problem is you have created a vacuum. And it's not just Germany. Let's broaden the horizon and look at it globally. There are a number of societies, and you can pretty much say every highly industrialized, developed and a country in the world has more or less the same problem. There are only very few exceptions. And that is, if people get very affluent and educated and get an option to have or not have children, and they have to choose between a comfortable life with a lot of vacations and spare time to use for yourself on the one hand, and on the other hand, having children where a lot of this goes down the drain. A lot of children means you don't have as much money, and we can go a little bit more detail just to make it clear what that actually means. And you can't go easily on vacations anymore, and you can't have the spare time you used to have. Then people just choose not to have children. That is so in Germany, that is so in Japan, that is so even if you, because I had this coming up with David Duke. He's always trying to find the Jewish angle to it, what's their influence and their role in making that happen. So I said, it's not just the white race, if you want to put it that way. It's pretty much hits every race when they reach the state of hedonism, I would say. When they have enough money and education and so forth that they can afford not having kids, or so they think. And to make clear what the issues involved are on an individual level, basically whether or not people have children is decided very much on an individual level. And you can't really put too much ideology in it, except that a society in general has given up on family values and on traditional gender roles, and that leads or supports that development.
In thinking about this and doing a little bit of reading and stuff, I think that the welfare society is at the base of the problem. You know, so there we have, like in so many things, you have something that's good, and then it's not good also. It brings about the dependence on the state for people, and that's a big question there, how that affects the society. How it affects the quality, the fiber of the people living in that society.
Yeah. So, having spoken about the global dimension of it, let's broaden it a little bit more. Let's go into life itself as we know it from the planet. What we experience here is one society going down because of low birth rate and being flooded with immigrants, and that is comparable. That you can see that everywhere in biology, and we humans cannot get an exemption from biological and laws of nature. It's just not working. If a subgroup of a population of a race of a species doesn't have any birth anymore, or not enough to support a population, and another subgroup has high birth rates, then it's very easy. That's the equation. They get replaced by those who have high birth rates and high. It's not just birth rates, but it's success in reproduction. Mm-hmm. You know, it's not just about having children, but of course raising them successfully. And whether you look at squirrels, rats, locusts, or human beings, it's the same. It's as simple as that. If a society stops having babies, they get wiped out. Period. Over and out. It's that easy. Now, does it necessarily have to happen when a population, a society get wealthy and well-educated? I say not necessarily so, because an interesting way of looking at it is taking subgroups within a society. Because you look here in America, in general, you have the white population, which in general is affluent and better educated than other populations. And you can say the more affluent and educated are, the lower the birth rates are. But there is one nice exception, particularly with the white population in the United States. And that's, let's pick out the Amish. They're white. They are affluent. They're not necessarily filthy rich, but they have all they need, and some are really well off. And yet, they are the only white subgroup in the United States that are consistently reproducing and growing. You can have a similar look at Israel, talking about the Jewish factor in it. Jews all over the world are not exempt from this tendency of self-extinction as soon as they get affluent. If you look at the Jews in the United States, they don't reproduce. They don't only have a problem of intermarriage and dissolving into the mainstream, but also that they don't have any children. And if you look in Israel, you have the more secularized Jews that don't have children, and the population is collapsing when you look at this part of your population. But on the other hand, you have the fundamentalist Jews, very religious, and they having a birth rate that more than replaces older generations, so they are growing. And I pretty much can see that everywhere. Where you have a group of population that keeps the birth rate up, they will succeed. And if you look, for instance, you can also do it for the Islamic world. There are countries that are Islamic, like Turkey is a prime example. You have the coastal Turkey, which is secularized more than the inland, which is well-educated and affluent. And then you have inland Turkey and Kurdistan. They are less so, but also importantly, they are more fundamentalist when it comes to Islam. And they have a higher birth rate. So, basically, and that's a provocative thesis I heard somewhere else. Somebody said, if you give the females of the human race the option whether or not they want to reproduce, then you face the extinction of humanity.
Mm-hmm.
Now, this is a little bit brutally put, but basically it depends on the females because they have the children, they bear the children at the end of the day. And if you look at the relationship between man and woman, if both want children, fine, they will have children. If both don't want to have children, they won't have children. But what's if the woman wants children and the man does not? What's going to happen? There's still going to be children because the man can't keep the fingers off of his wife because he wants to have sex, and she's deciding whether that's going to end up in pregnancy or not if she has the control. If the wife, however, says no, well, that's the end. So it depends basically on whether women want to have children or not. And if you keep a society, if you create a society where women are given the liberty to decide and where there is no ideological or religious attitude within the population that keeps family values and gender roles up as they have been for millions of years, then humanity will go extinct in the long run. Now, of course, on a planetary level, we don't face the problem. We have overpopulation problems, but we are now talking about the societies in the world, and that's particularly true for almost all of Europe, where populations are collapsing because these are populations that have given up on religion, given up on traditional gender roles, given up on family values, are affluent, are highly educated, where the women have been taught and raised to be completely under control of what they want, career, money, and a nice life, or staying at home and having children, and they make that decision, And that's the end of the society.
But Guillermo, as you're saying all this, it becomes very clear to me that, let's say, even in advanced societies such as ours, as you said, the problem was the female, given the choice, would choose not to have children or maybe to have one or two or something like that or none. The females are not choosing to have children, which is a natural function of their physical self, then there has to be a reason for that. It's not enjoyable. It's not pleasant. It's not made, it's not something that's rewarding enough in our social setup. So in fundamental societies, they just force it. But if we don't want to force our females in that way in our more advanced thinking, we need to make having children a choice that a woman would make. You see, we need to give them a lot of incentives and make them feel that having a family and raising a family is a better choice for them than the opposite. And it also occurs to me, and I'd like you to address this, that there are forces or powers that be that have created a desire in women that have, well, I remember it going on in my life because I lived right through it, where having a family was, it gave a woman less status than if they were out there with a job and, you know, functioning as an equal, in a more equal way to men.
That's right. I think right when I grew up, I've come to realize, I wasn't even a grown up, that the world I'm growing into is materialistic, is geared toward individualized self-fulfillment, just I, so centralized on the ego and not on family values, on giving, on sharing, on, it's more on loving yourself than loving the other. And that's unfortunately true. So there's a general attitude. Now, it's not just the females that say no, and need to clearly state both genders make today decisions against family and against children. And you hear a lot of ex post facto rationalizations, excuses they make up because, oh, the world is already overpopulated or the world is so terrible and don't want to put children into this world and whatever excuses come up there. That is from the upper layers of the brain, but basically these decisions are made by very low layers of the brain, reproductive system, reward and non-reward. And that is right. What would the stimuli have to be for men and women wanting to have children again? Right now, what our society is focused on is materialistic status. So, if you just look at what we are thinking about when we think about our lives, a lot of people do, that is money, career, status, and truly, if you look at these factors, if you make a brutal calculation, you get a partner and you decide not to have children, you both can get a wonderful education up through college, university, then you can make career and with no stops pulled anywhere, and let's say you will be able to make $3,000 or $4,000 a month, both of you, so both of you will end up having available every month $3,000 or $4,000. Whereas if you make the other decision, you go for a family, not just one kid, but two or three, maybe even more. That means one of the partners, if you want to raise those children, probably stays at home. Even maybe they start having children early. That means one of the partners doesn't get a university degree, but cuts the education short somewhere on college level or whatever, and or even high school. So you end up one person staying at home, and the other person only making a career, and not even all that stellar a career because you want to enjoy family, you want to support your partner at home with the children, you want to see the children grow up, not always be in the office and make a career. So you're not making all that much money. You have only one partner working and earning money for at least as long as it takes to get the children to some age. And so you're having maybe only $2,000 or $3,000 a month, and you have to share it with five people in the house. So there's the contrast between 4,000 for each head of the house or 3,000 for five, which divides down to 600 if you share it up equally. So it's a contrast between 600 per person and 3,000 or 4,000 per person. And then how do you go on vacation with three kids? How do you, are you going to have spare time going out with your wife having fun with friends if you have kids at home? At least for the first 10, 15 years until they're an age where you can actually start doing that again. So
And then today's men, I don't think men used to be this way, and even when I was a child, but today's men, it seems, not all of them, well, it's not me, but when their wife is pregnant or, you know, preoccupied with newborns and babies, then they start looking for extramarital sex somewhere else. Yeah. You know, and this doesn't help either. And that's where the, I guess the religion comes in.
That is right. I mean, sex drive for men doesn't stop when the wife gets pregnant, and mm-hmm. but with the wife it does stop, and it picks up again well after. I had five children, so I know if I make my wife pregnant, I know I'm not going to have sex for a year. And mm-hmm. you do that with three, four children in a row, that's your sex life when you're young is not going to be all that exciting compared to when you have a partner, she's never getting pregnant, and you have fun both together as much as you want on that level. It's an extreme difference. So the enjoyments of life, if you boil it down to sex, drugs, money, and rock and roll, if you have a lot of children, that's the end of it. It's not going to happen. It's not going to happen to that degree. So why would anyone do that? And you look at the statistics, and so you see, well, they don't. And that's the end of a society. It's killing itself. It's dissolving itself.
Mm-hmm.
So how do we get to the point of getting people to realize that this is not the right way? When you look at how the religions do it, and you know, well, they have found a way of railing in people from childhood on, equipping them with a value system that maintains a society, maintains a group of human beings, subgroup, whatever you want to call them. And unless you have that implemented to raise and teach during childhood these values, then you're not going to go anywhere. I spoke in the exchange I had with David Duke about Michael Hoffman, having sent around a newsletter where he said, well, unless you can't find the Islamic threat unless you go back, the Occident goes back to its fundamental Christian values. So he wants everyone to revert, and to some degree, a similar statement could be made about the birth crisis. Oh, wait, I have my five-year-old come in here. Yeah, that's another fact. You can't have chats with someone without being disturbed by your own children. Put it on the radiator to dry. How about that? No, it's not completely blue. Not put it away. Okay.
It's a good lesson. Gemma, you know, I thought that all your children were in school now, but you've got one that's not in school.
No, 5-year-old goes to kindergarten half day, and then the second half is with me. So I had to, she was in preschool for an extended period of time during the day, and I had more time. This year, I can't do much because most of the time she's here, and she's just in kindergarten for 2.5 hours, and that's not much.
No.
So how much time do I have to myself? And the other kids come home, and they are 5, 8, and 10, and well, there's a lot going on, and will be for many years to come. And so why would anyone do that? And I've made that conscious decision for family and children. I've done it twice, and I have now 5 children. And why have I done it? Even though I don't call myself a Christian fundamentalist, as Michael Hoffman could perhaps be characterized, even though I was quite an ardent Catholic when I was young, but that has changed for a number of reasons with the years. But still, I consider certain values to be absolutely necessary for my life. They haven't changed in that regard, and that's a matter of personal experience. I know that having talked with so many people who have not had any children, who will not have any children. Some of them are white nationalist supremacists are always talking about the demographic crisis, and most of them don't have any children. They're not even living in a stable relationship. You know, they talk right and they live left. That's just
I think you're right, and I think that's not pointed out very often. And when it is, they make excuses for it. But, you know, and speaking about, I just wanted to put in one thing here about the religious angle. Well, the way it used to be control society, you didn't really have any choice. I mean, I remember my father saying, well, that's what you do in life. You get married, you have a family, you have children, that's what you do. You know, you don't really question it. That's the way it was for him, you know, still when he was growing up. But somewhere it has been injected that we don't have to do that. Although I realize that the birth rate for European people has started going down in the 1800s. So even though most people were getting married and having children when I was a kid, they didn't have big families except a few people. And also, that really changed radically beginning in the 60s.
Yeah, I mean, you need to have a balance. Looking at the globe, we can't have constant population growth, so it needs to even out at some point or even reduce to some degree in a number of countries to come to an ecologically sustainable balance. But of course, the situation we have in a lot of these European countries is not healthy, and
And you know, another thing here. Let me just say real quick that during the time I'm talking about the 60s. And then continuing on, but there was so much talk about the population explosion where we were just going to be, the planet was going to be overloaded with people. And that was very influential to people, to Americans.
That is true, but they were preaching it to the wrong people because at that
time. I'm considering that they were doing that on purpose to change our societies.
That's right, but there's only one contributing factor. As I told during Duke's show, the first prerequisite was, of course, that you had the anti-baby pill so that you could have, as I said, fornication with impunity.
Mm-hmm.
So the complete disconnect of sexual activity from reproduction, from family, that allowed this catastrophe, this cataclysm that the developed countries experience. And without it, I think it wouldn't have been possible at all. And that would have come either way because chemistry has been making progress. I remember having seen research papers about Germany having been a leader in chemistry for almost a half a century. And they were making the connection between certain hormones and that were shed during pregnancy to stop ovulation. And so it was a matter of time had the Second World War not been, I think, German scientists would have come up with the anti-baby pill already in the 40s or 50s. Now, so now we had it in the 60s, and so that was something that was to come. Then there would have been a need to counter that with ideological attitudes to shore up the stability of family and family values. But what happened, of course, is the exact contrary, that giving this sexual liberation, quote-unquote, the propaganda that came along with it, that everybody could have sex with anyone at any time, and it doesn't matter anymore. And so that was definitely detrimental. But the people's, you know, given the choice, as I said, all the things you can't do when you get children, given the choice of not shoring them up with proper education during childhood and proper examples lived by their own parents and by society around them, would lead to a reaction as we have it right now. So what is needed? That's a big question. And I got an email from some right-wing group that were trying to figure out whether I am one of them. I have that posted on my website, actually. They made an interview, and they never published it. So they wanted to find out whether I am all for support of the white race and its survival. And I said basically in there, in my answers, well, of course, I'm more invested in my own kin than in people that have no direct relationship to me. I'm most invested in my own kids. I'm more invested in my relatives than in people that are just somehow, somewhere from, even if they are white. You know, my relatives are closer than some people of my own nation. But then again, my own nation is closer to my heart than other nations, and my own cultural circle is closer to other cultural circles. So it is only natural that you identify and want to support and want your own group to succeed and survive. But when it boils down to biology again, particularly these right-wing groups, they're always about survival of the fittest, and they think, well, the white group, the white race has been so fit. Yeah, it has been over the past, shall we say, 2,000, 3,000 years, since the Greek and the Roman Empire and then Europe colonizing the entire globe and so forth. But what's now? Right now, survival of the fittest, the way the white race as individuals, as they have, oh, what do we have, 800 million individuals that we have, how they react, they are not the fittest. They are the unfittest on the whole globe because they're not reproducing, they're not keeping up family values, they're not doing the most necessary things to maintain their society. And if I follow the rules of biology, races and species that are not fit for survival by necessity need to go extinct. So, a harsh verdict, but if those right-wingers apply their own way of thinking to their own behavior or their own group's behavior, that is the verdict that they're getting, and it's happening. We don't have to go to do anything actively for the white race to go extinct because it's already doing that. That's what biology does. If you don't do the necessary things, you go down.
Mm-hmm. You know, can I ask you, don't you think that the Third Reich, Adolf Hitler's regime in the 30s, was doing the right things as far as everything that you're talking about? As far as keeping
it was about their society. I don't think they Germany was a completely different society back then for many reasons. It had little to do with National Socialism because family values and gender roles were in place basically everywhere in the world still. And National Socialism was quite progressive in that time, trying to allow women to have career and be successful. There were so many first female, Reni Riefenstahl and other people who were successful and famous in Germany.
But they were just a very few. Yes. But I think that speaks very well of that regime. Well, but so the fact is that the German birth rate went down unnaturally so after the First World War and the Depression and all that, and of course the particular hardships in Germany. So they realized that they needed to do something, and they did create the one thing, the status for being a mother, and they did give a lot of extra benefits to couples who got married and had children. They encouraged young German people to marry. You know, they right. taught them about things in the schools and so on. So they were doing the whole program that we would say we need to do today.
Underestimated should not be the most important contributing factors to people back then wanting to have families and children. That is economic prosperity and safety, social and economic safety. That was completely gone after the First World War during the Weimar Republic with poverty, with the crisis, one crisis after the other. And then having gotten Germany out of that on a track of self-respect and prosperity in many regards made the birth rate bounce back more than all the incentives could have done. Because if I look at what actually the Third Reich has done financially and socially for families and compared what modern Germany today does, I must say, if I'm not mistaken, modern Germany does more. They have, because of the dreadful situation, jacked up child support. They have now in place two things that weren't available during the Third Reich. First of all, if a mother gets pregnant, she can take off for 3 years, 1 year partially paid, the next 2 years unpaid. But after the 3 years, she can get back to her old position, an employer, and says, I want my old position back. And the employer is forced to do that. So they can't lose their job. And if you have several children in the row, that extends accordingly. And my first wife is from Germany, and she did that. She had actually 4 children, and first 2 with me and then with another partner. And so she, with the first set, had 5 years, 4.5 years, where she didn't return to her workplace, but then she did after 4.5 years and was still there. Plus, child-rearing years are recognized for the German social security system, by the German system, as contributing years to social security. So you, when you have done 20, 30 years of child rearing and haven't worked during that time, no matter whether you're man or woman, then you have 20 or 30 years of recognized contribution to the retirement system, and you will get payment. So strictly speaking, there's more done financially. Mm-hmm. And also the general populace is better off, materialistically speaking, than during the Third Reich. Yet still, people don't have children. The German system is paying through the nose to families who have children, which are immigrants. They have the same right to get the same payments as they get it.
Oh, yeah. God.
So, the German system now is paying for the replacement for its own.
That's right.
Because the Germans themselves, the ethnic Germans, with all the money that could be blown into their asses by having children, they are not interested in it. As I said now, they have the choice between $4,000 every year. You can have state retirement insurance. You can have your own private insurance. You still could have sex all you want. You can have vacations all you want. You can ride big cars you want. You can get a big house. You can even get a retirement home down at the Mediterranean Sea. But if you have children, end of it. No matter how much the government pays you, it's not going to offset the losses these people feel by committing to family and children.
You know, Gilmer, when in the Third Reich, the newspapers and the media and so on did not have the stuff in it that you find today in every newspaper somewhere, just all sorts of pornographic type sex and so on, and the worship of celebrities and all of that kind of thing. So, you know, that shows right there what the values of a society are.
That's right. Now, I have made my conscious decision, and with people that I talk to, why would I have children? Is I tell them, well, you cannot measure the emotional gratification that you experience when you have children if you are a childless couple. You will never experience, you will never know how deep love can be. You are in a heterosexual or homosexual, whatever relationship with some partner, but this is conditional love. You know, if I have a relationship to some partner, it's always conditional on her being interesting to me, being appealing to me on whatever level I'm interested in. And that's so different when you have a child, because you love, if you're a normal person, and most people are emotionally normal, you love a child unconditionally. And you love a child endlessly in time, in terms of time, but also otherwise. You know, if you have a partner, look at what reality is. Do you love your wife or your husband unconditionally, no matter what he does? A child screws up over and over again, and when they are grown up, sometimes they get in conflict with the law and so forth. Would you stay married, or would you stay the partner of a person that screws up over and over again? No, you wouldn't. Would you stay partner of someone who changes their attitude, who cheats, who does this, who does that? No, you wouldn't. It's all conditional. Unconditional love, the true, endless, infinite, timeless love, you can only find in the relationship with your children.
Well,
and that's an emotional...
I hear everybody saying that, but here's the... How about this? People don't want that. Don't want that kind of choiceless love today. They want to have choices. They want to be able to move on. They don't want to be trapped into a, see, I'm speaking for my own, probably my own inner self here, but, in a relationship that is forever. And, you know, it's not seen as what people want today. It's not because it doesn't include choice, and everything in our culture has been turned into choice. You know, you have the right to choose. from birth to death, I guess. You know, you don't want to lose your choice.
Well, you know, you get your picking a partner that is giving you a somewhat guarantee that your offspring will be good. That's, of course, a good thing to do now.
Mm-hmm.
If I look at who procreates today, you know. Anyway, you know, the people who say that nature doesn't play as much a role as nurture, that the leftists mainly nurture is so important, mm-hmm. if that is so, and if you don't give the people something to choose from that is actually valuable and makes them fit for life, but say everything is relative, you make your own choices, but what conditions should a child, what criteria should a child apply to make a decision? They are children. That's by definition an individual that is not capable of making life-defining choices. That's why we are parents, and we have to make them for them. And most parents don't do that anymore.
Mm-hmm.
And the society doesn't support them in that, unless you are in a...
Well, society does the opposite. Society goes in and raids the homes of parents if the children complain about it. I'm not saying there are cases where that needs to be done, but you know, when the government decides to tell you that you can't raise your child this or that way, and the children have rights and so on, then parents are not going to.
I can tell you some stories because we have actually two of the five children I have adopted, and once you adopt children, you got the. Already foster or adopt, so you get constantly the authorities on your back, and they are controlling and surveying and monitoring what's going on. And I have realized being an adoptive parent nowadays is like being with one foot in prison. I've realized that mm-hmm. lately because when a child, you know, when you have foster kids or adoptive kids, they have gone through trauma of separation and whatever that is, you can't really tell as an adoptive person what has been going on, but they have been obviously taken away from their birth home, which is traumatic, and have developed behavioral problems, which as an adoptive parent you struggle with for years to come or your entire life. And then rearing a child like that isn't even your own birth child, is a challenge. And the slightest hiccup, a vengeful or disgruntled child that makes a call to authorities or just tells a teacher some wild story, and then the authorities make an investigation, and suddenly the district attorney opens a criminal investigation mm-hmm. for child mm-hmm. abuse. They have tightened the law in this regard so much that it's ridiculous nowadays trying to raise a child that's a troublemaker. You need to put some tough discipline in place to teach the kids discipline and self-discipline, but then you're getting stabbed in the back by authorities. That can happen, yeah. So they have gone way overboard with trying to protect children. Nobody's concerned about trying to protect family values, and if you just look at the facts of all of our societies of Western culture, highly industrialized nations, patchwork families are the norm,
mm-hmm.
which means families that have fallen apart because of wrong decisions people have made when they form partnership, when they decide to have children, or when they just walk out. So easy. My first wife walked out. Being a persecuted revisionist on the run didn't make it any easier. But it's so easy nowadays to just walk out
That's
of
right.
relationship and leave all the trauma for others to deal with. Mostly it's men today when we're talking about women with kids that walk out. But no, women walk away just the same. And a society like that is unfit for survival. I'm sorry to say it. If you don't change your ways radically, the only thing that will happen in the long run to America is you're being taken over partly by the Amish, because they are the only ones who are keeping it up, and by some religious subgroups of whatever, Islam, Jewish, Christian faith that are able to maintain things. And we are talking about just 100 or 200 years, because 4, 5, 6, 7 reproductive cycles, and those who don't reproduce will be gone.
Mm-hmm.
So how that can be addressed in a world that's secularized, that used to be Christian, I don't think that you can simply revert to some old Christian values. Maybe it can be done. I don't even know whether I wanted it. For me, it was an intellectual decision, understanding all these connections, making a conscious decision for family and for children. But most people aren't. They are more on the superficial materialistic level than the...
Yeah, they are. And, you know, another thing is that you have to value your own people. And if you don't value your own people and think they can be replaced by other people, then you'll let that happen. I think there's a lack of self-value in whites today, and I think that's been encouraged politically too. So that's another thing where I think white people are responsible in a lot of ways, but they've also been propagandized to think that it's not important if they reproduce, and to be really encouraged by all the superficial values and so on to not do it, to choose a life of freedom.
Freedom
yeah,
for what?
Freedom. Yeah, that's right.
Freedom
that's
from
right.
what? That's what we're talking about. This is one of the terms, choice. You know, you taken out, my generation has taken out freedoms, quote unquote, to trash the lives of the generations that come past them. And I've mentioned that before. My father has had a stroke. He had to go into the hospital. And it's always the grandchild generation that takes care of the grandparents when it comes to nursing homes and old age retirement homes, hospitals, and so forth. And Germany is going through a population collapse. Now, my year has been the strongest year birth rate-wise in German post-war history. That was 1964. And if I look how my children, this first set who are grown-ups, how their generation is reproducing and how mine has reproduced, I can say that by the time my generation retires, gets into retirement homes, nursing homes, gets a lot of health problems, ends up in hospitals, there will be only a quarter or even less of people in that grandchild generation to take care of them. And to be honest, nurses, being a nurse in a hospital, in a nursing home, in a retirement home, is a pretty tough job, and not a lot of people want to do that. And if there's shortage of qualified young people anyhow, as there is already in Germany with the collapse, nobody wants to do nursing anymore. And my father is experiencing it already now. He has had birth troubles, gotten to the hospital, and there was just nobody there. They had, I don't know, 30, 40, 50 patients with just one or two nurses, and they were completely overwhelmed, and it's getting worse. They have their own term in Germany for that, Pflegenotstand, so it's an emergency situation for caretakers, caregivers rather, in all sorts of settings, and it's gonna get worse. So, the generation that enjoys and frees itself from commitments and obligations is just putting those burdens on generations that come next. It's irresponsible. It's egotistic. It's trampling upon the rights of future generations. That's the same generation that is fighting for, in particular in Germany, for green values, as they call it, that is to say environmentalism. We need to hand over the planet in a better shape than we have taken it over. We need to take care of things because the next generation has a right to live in a healthy environment. But that's not just biologically speaking. That's also socially speaking or societally speaking. And this egotistical behavior, I want all the money for me and for my enjoyment, and the next generation can just get lost because everything in society will collapse. It's not just in the nursing homes, you know. If there aren't any consumers left, if there aren't any taxpayers left, who is going to keep up that society? If you have cut your population in half within one generation, what's the consumer base going to look like? Every company has to shrink by a certain percentage every year because there are less people there, unless you import consumers, which this country has done over the years to keep things up, and which Germany now thinks they have to do in order to keep things up. But the way you can't import the same kind of people with the same kind of attitude. Well, maybe that's a good thing. If you get all the Muslims into Germany, that will reproduce and that put in a system that works because they will hold up family values. Hopefully they don't integrate in that respect. Maybe you end up with a society that will be down the road in 50 years, Muslim, dominated by Arabs, but it's working. And if they pick up on some good German habits like...
No, they won't. They can't because it's racial. They can't pick up on good German habits without the Germans there.
No, they won't.
But here's the thing that all this talk about, oh well, these refugees and these immigrants that are coming in, they've got to follow our laws, they've got to follow our culture, they've got to follow this and that. That's just baloney. They're not going to, and nobody's going to make them, and it's not going to happen.
Germany anyway, they have massive trouble trying to force the language on people, like they have in this country. There's so much ideological pressure from the left to say, well, it's a good thing that Germany disappears. After all the things that Germany has done to the world, like the First World War, the Second World War, the Holocaust, and all the other genocides that have started, were initiated by the German people. Good riddance. Finally, the genocidal maniacs of the world have disappeared.
In listening to what you're saying here, it comes to me that it comes down to valuing our race and valuing our nationality. And when you lose that, and that's what the modern world has lost since 1945, let's say, just to put a date on it that works, since the general push of what we're supposed to believe has been in the direction of it does not matter, and it's racist and horrible to think that it does matter, that is the reason that we've come down the way we have going in this direction. And I think that's the antidote, because as you've said, and I read about it myself, all these programs that have been put in place to encourage Germans and Europeans to have children and American whites to have children and to be married and stay married and so on doesn't work. They're not working.
It's not a materialistic problem. People aren't too poor to have children. So trying to change it with money, throwing money at people is not going to work, because that's not the, at least not at that dimension. And at the dimension where it would work, it would be so obscene that
our values are screwed up. Our values are gone. They've been taken away from us, and we've fallen for it because we didn't have enough insight. Who was on our side? Nobody was on that side.
Life is about creating life in love. And which society ever does not understand this and makes it as its core motto is going to go down the drain.
Well, when you say love, they think about love for humanity.
I'm talking about love of a parent to a child.
I know, but when you talk about society to create life and love, then they don't care who's being loved or who's been given life. And the more that you spread it around to other members of humanity, unlike yourself, the higher quality is your love.
Are we allowed to love ourselves, and are we allowed to love our kin? It's not about hate. It's about love. You know, the propaganda is it's about hate. Everyone who says we want the white race to maintain is a hater. Right? That's the propaganda.
Mm-hmm. Nobody should fall for
it's a concept of humanity. Love. Am I allowed to love myself? Am I allowed to love my children? Am I allowed to love my kin and my race, my culture, whatever I want to call it?
And no,
yes,
you're not.
I am. I have an obligation to love. That's what it boils down to.
As I said, I think this concept of humanity is a problem. And everybody falls for the idea that, oh, that's the highest ideal. What's good for humanity? Well, what the heck? How can you even talk about humanity? It's much too big and too diverse for people.
It has to be diverse. Any monoculture is doomed to fail. So if you turn humanity into a monoculture of only one way of one skin color, one religion, one political system, then it's bound to fail. You always have to have competition. You always have to have diversity or else it'll work. People don't seem to understand that.
So then what is your solution for this?
I either everybody converts to Islam, then we get rid of several problems. We get rid of Zionist problems, Jewish problems. We get rid of the problems of family values not being upheld. This is one, and nobody would do that. But it seems to me rather logical. Or we revert back, which nobody wants to do, or we leave it up to nature to decide who is going to be the fittest.
Well, what was the one that you said we revert back, but nobody wants
to? To traditional Christian
right.
values.
Yeah.
Because that's where we came from. But if you look at the development, Europe is secularized. There are hardly any Christians left, except maybe formally. And in America, I've been looking up the memberships of all the Christian churches, and they're in free fall. They have been since the 70s. We are behind a generation behind Europe, but that means in a generation we will be there too. And I don't, that's what I mean. It's nobody seems to be willing to do that. People give up on more and more on religious values in this country, on the Christian frontier at least.
Well, you're right about that, about the religious thing, and we don't want to go backwards and lose our maybe more advanced understanding of things and just believe in fairy tales and so on. So I think it comes down to race, and that's what they've demonized the most. You know, you can't think in terms of race, but that's exactly what you need to do if you're going to keep your own type of people, you know, your racial kin, alive and well in this world.
Well, that's one solution, and of course that's big. There is a big cork in the bottle, and that's called all the propaganda that we have gotten rammed down our throat ever since 1933. It didn't just start in 45, but it got worse then.
Mm-hmm.
And the inaccuracy of that propaganda and the background. Fighting against this is huge uphill battle, but there's no other choice.
No, I mean, if you value, if we are, talk about nature, we are people that we have given the name of the white race, and I don't like that very much, but,
I like to call it the colored race, because we are the only ones where you can find black hair, brown hair, yellow hair, white hair, blue eyes, green eyes, gray eyes, brown eyes, black eyes. We are the colored race, and all the others are
colorful. We might say the colorful.
They're all brown and black, and that's it.
Yeah.
Brown hair,
yeah.
Black hair, and brown eyes.
And we have evolved into something very unique, and we all understand that. We all recognize it, but we've been shamed into thinking that we're so wrong that if we like what we are, we're feeling superior to others because the fact is, we are, I have to say this, we are superior to most others. Well, you're not allowed to think that or say that, but so we say we're not, but we're just unique and we want to keep ourselves. But like you say, though, it comes down to they can say, well, do it, you know, you're not having kids, you know, that's your problem, so just go ahead and keep yourself going. Nobody's stopping you. Well, there you go. There's the crux of the problem right there. Mm-hmm. Is this our free choice, or has this been imposed on us by a political elite that sees us as a problem?
It's a mixture of both.
Yeah.
To recognize what's going on and then to make the decision and to pull it through in your life requires a lot of discipline, requires a lot of insight and skill, and most people are just not there. So they need guidance, and they get their guidance right now from the wrong side. And there is no guidance that shows them here. That's what life is about, and that's how our society and the only way it can function, and that's why we should have pride in ourselves as everyone else, and that's why we should do these things to maintain ourselves, to love ourselves, to have more out of life than sex, drug, and rock and roll. And that prayer they don't hear in the media, or rarely ever.
Yeah.
And really, I mean, at the end, those will survive who do reproduce. And if it's only the Amish in America, it will be the only ones left. The Amish, the Mennonite, maybe some Mormons, and all the rest will go down.
Yeah. Well, you might be right that those who, you are right that, that those who call themselves white nationalists and are the most concerned about this don't make good models of themselves.
Well, they have an uphill battle. You know, white nationalist or racist today is an outsider, and to be an outsider, to be able to live outside of society, to be pariah, you have to have some lack of socializing skills or lack of instincts to be able to live that way, which doesn't actually bode well for having partnerships and getting mates that go along the same line. So any outsider position likely leads to less success in reproduction. You're always having the most prospect for success in this regard when you stay mainstream. And as outside of normal society as right-wingers, the racialists or whatever you want to call them, have put themselves or have been put, they would have a hard time flying that banner officially and finding a mate. That's just a fact. It's true for every outsider position. So yeah. It doesn't make it easier. But it.
Yeah, I think there's a, like, I know I always wanted to be, you know, from the time I was, say, a teenager, I always wanted to be outside of the main, you know, mainstream thinking, which I kind of looked down on. They didn't think about the things I did. So, you know, there's always that. And I'm an example of that. I think that's very, very true. Not just to say that that's why, pro-white people don't have families, so many of them, but, I think that that's, might be a problem with advanced races with white people being able to go beyond, even though there's a lot of mainstream people, they're not mainstream in the way they used to be. So we kind of opt ourselves right out of the main, mode of, nature having children. You know, we just opt out of that, and there's more and more and more white people opting out of that. Do you think that makes any sense?
Yeah, unfortunately.
Yeah, it is unfortunate. It's very unfortunate. And that would be like then something that is, you know, we've just moved ourselves into that position, and the world belongs to those less advanced people who still don't think as much as we think.
Yeah, but biology is not about being intellectually or industrially advanced or whatever you want to call it, or more educated. It always ends up with reproductive success. That's what counts at the end of the day.
Yeah.
And that's where the white race is failing. And if we don't turn that around, whatever it takes, then that's the end.
Do you think any group that would take on this challenge and really speak about it and really have a mission about it would get anywhere with white people today?
Not the powers as they are right now. I don't see any. You know, they have this party in Germany, and I've seen that they go through that again and again. When there is some party or some movement forming, they have agents provocateurs in there. They have suddenly events happening that allows the government to suppress them or to malign them in the media, to be all over them and make propaganda, and it gets trashed and trampled into the dust. There is. These any of that kind of movement could have success if mildly supported or only left in peace, but there is so much pressure, persecutorial pressure from the media and from the government against anything coming from that corner that I am really pessimistic with the situation it is right now. I think really, unfortunately, what has to happen is that this civilization has to collapse, and then things regroup naturally, and then things will get back into some kind of balance, which will look drastically different than what we are used to now, I'm sure, but realistically speaking, I am not too optimistic. which doesn't mean, you know, you prepare for the day after, so to say. You try to keep up as much as you can and prepare biologically whatever you can do to have a base to start from when things crash. I don't think they will crash that much in this country. It's a much more affluent development in the United States, but in Europe it is dramatic, and Europe will be flooded mainly by black Africans, because that's where the main pressure is, and black Africa is around the corner. You know, you can walk into Europe from black Africa. You go across the Sahara or down the Nile River, and then you can. That's how Europe got populated
40,000
years ago. And it's going to happen again. Back then we had the Neanderthals. They were replaced by Homo sapiens. Back then there were black Africans coming out of Africa and pushing Neanderthals to the extinction.
Well, some people disagree with that.
And it's going to happen again unless something dramatic happens. I don't know what's going to happen, but we'll see.
Some people disagree with that out of Africa.
Yeah, I know.
Theory.
I'm familiar that people disagree with it, but let's just stick with the image. What I'm getting at is saying,
yeah.
That's what's probably going to happen over the next 100, 200 years, unless there's some dramatic...
What's your opinion of the European Union in all of this? What role are they playing?
It's a huge bureaucracy that's unable to move anything. It's so top-heavy, and it's a Babylonic chaos of languages and attitudes and concepts and... enmities from wars fought over 2,000 years. They try to keep together and jealousies of this is not going anywhere.
So. Yeah, that's right. That was impossible from the beginning, although people had high hopes for it. And I think as you describe it is exactly the way I would agree with. What is your prognosis for that? And if that breaks apart, then Europe is just made up of a lot of little states, some very, very poor and not very capable. Well, then the prognosis would be the flood of non-whites and the flood of Africans and so on increasing. Would you think so?
Well, if Europe could muster a defense against that and some program of self-preservation, it has to be on a European level, and there has to be some organization. Now, the European Union as it exists right now is not capable, so it has to be restructured, regrouped, rebuilt, whatever. But if everything falls completely apart and goes back to 50 tiny European nations all fending for themselves, it's not going to get any better. It's getting worse.
Yeah.
So... and they are going to fight against each other, too, because that's what the history was, and they're going right back to it. It's not.
That's,
you know,
right.
We had the Serbian war against the Croatians. So they are not done with it just because they have an external threat, unless they have some unification in this.
Maybe that's the problem. Maybe the way that Europe developed, or part of the problem, in all these small nation states with really a lot of extraordinary people in their populations and creating a fantastic culture, but if it can't survive, it's not survivable in the world as it's developed now.
If Europe were an island thousands of miles away from everything else, like America kind of is,
mm-hmm.
it would be fine, but it's not. You know, from Africa to Europe, you jump across Gibraltar, it's just a few miles, and you come through Sicily and to Italy, it's just a few miles. So you can hop on a boat and sail across, and that's what's happening. Or they come through Istanbul, which is, there is no separation. I mean, technically speaking, geologically speaking, Italy is a part of Africa, not of Europe. And this kind of politically fractured continent, as it was able to survive in centuries where there has not been mass movement,
mm-hmm.
is unable to survive in the current world unless they get their act together and think as a continent, as a community of white people that have to struggle for survival. And I don't think they are there yet.
No, and then wanting to bring Turkey in order to gain strength and have Turkey's help in certain things, then you're really blending Islam with Europe. What do you think about that movement?
Well, opening Europe to Turkey means opening Europe to pretty much everything. Mm-hmm. So you have to draw limits where people are able to develop an identity, because without having an identity, having common ground with people, you don't get any feeling of identity. If you want people to sacrifice for something common, a common cause, if you dilute it so much that the common cause could be anything, then people are not willing to give anything anymore. Mm-hmm. So you have to have limits, and for Europe, that's the Bosporus. You have to draw the line there. If not, if you put Turkey in there, why not Kazakhstan? Why not Uzbekistan? Why not Saudi Arabia? Why not Syria? Mm-hmm. Why not everyone else that's Muslim? There's no stopping.
Mm-hmm.
So either you give up completely and then you're lost, or you have to draw lines. And there's only one logical line to draw. That's the old Christian Europe. Mm-hmm. It's not necessarily Christian anymore, but it has developed some common
it's
features.
Full of churches. It's got a lot of churches. That says it's Christian. So keep the mosques out. The prognosis looks pretty bleak.
Yeah, David Duke always tells me he wants something positive so that people keep supporting the cause, and that's also to say supporting him.
Yeah,
which
right.
I understand. But you know, unless people realize how serious the situation is, I don't think mm-hmm. anyone will wake up. And just a few million waking up isn't going to do it. We need 500 million Europeans to wake up. And if I look at Germany, half of the German population is suicidal. Not on an individual level, but on a societal level. They don't care. They don't give a rat's ass. They're actually happy, as I said before. They have given up. They don't want themselves anymore. And with that kind of an attitude, what do you want to do?
Well, I guess I haven't accepted such a thing that many Germans, half the German nation. You're saying, and you know more about Germany than I do, it's for sure.
Well, you know, I don't understand why people still in the recent polls, 55-60% vote for parties or want to vote for parties that the Social Democrats, the Greens, and the left parties, mm-hmm. they are the ones who publicly, again, leaders of their parties say, well, it's maybe good that Germany stops being what it used to be and that we get replaced with other people, and they are happy that Germany disappears. They say that publicly, and the people vote for these people. And what can I say?
Yeah. Yeah, well, that's always been that's a big problem in Germany, is all those left parties who have a large part of the support. So, you know, what is it in Germans? But communism and leftism has always been a big problem.
Well,
I mean, a big part of Germany.
It wasn't always self-destructive. But this is clearly an effect of Holocaust propaganda. It's self-hatred because they think they are the genocidal maniacs and it's a good thing to disappear. That's what it boils down to.
Well, okay, then let's turn to the Holocaust a little bit, if you don't mind.
I won't be able to do that today because my little one has to go to the kindergarten soon and she has
okay. questions. All right.
We would have to
All
postpone
right.
that and do that some other time.
Okay, we can do that another time. So how much time do you have left, Cameron?
Pretty much nothing.
Oh, okay. Well, do you want to give some summing up then, or just some final remarks about what you talked about today?
No, really. I'm under time pressure now, and it may all sound bleak, but I don't give up because life ends when you give up. You just keep paddling, because if you stop paddling, it's like a cyclist. Stop paddling, you fall off. That's the end.
Yeah, I've thought about that. I thought about, why don't I just quit all this?
Yeah.
And then I think I wonder if I'd just go downhill real fast, you know, if I did that. I wouldn't care about anything. Yeah, you have to do something, and you have to believe in something. Well, Guillermo, I really thank you for this talk today. I think it's rather extraordinary in what we generally hear today, and I think we need to speak on this level and in this way more often. We need to get down to the nitty-gritty. But I will let you go now and say once again thank you and so long for today.
Hey, thank you. Bye.
Uh-huh. Bye-bye. So there you have it. My take on the problem lies with us, we, the high-achieving Aryan people. We have evolved to the point of selecting ourselves right out of existence. Can we decide differently, or is this too entrenched in our genetic makeup? I don't know, but this ends my program for this time. This is Carolyn Yeager with the Heretics Hour on December 4th, 2015. Till next time.